Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning once again. I'm Dean Reuter, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. For our first address today, we welcome a man who is no stranger to hard work. Raised in a modest household, he learned the value of money, good hard work, and traditional values. And these core tenets have guided his pursuit of the American dream ever since. Before attending the University of Missouri, Kansas City, he served honorably in the U.S. Navy. After earning his JD from SMU, he worked in Dallas's largest law firm, specializing in healthcare matters. Later, in founding the Columbia Hospital Corporation, he established what has become the largest for-profit healthcare conglomerate in the nation. Columbia HCA employs over 199,000 people. Now, that's job creation for you. And it provides quality health care to millions of people. But he didn't rest there. He and his wife, Anne, have also worked with a group called World Vision to provide primary health care, a primary health care system in Bunyale, Kenya. And as governor, he's upheld his commitment to the people of Florida, emphasizing the importance of accountability. He ran his campaign under the slogan, "Let's get to work," a phrase that still resonates with Floridians today. His policies have fostered economic prosperity. Under his leadership, Florida has enjoyed 25 months of consecutive job growth. So we have an entrepreneur who succeeded in the private sector and translated that success in the government sphere. Sadly, Governor Scott's mother very recently passed away, but yet he's still here today, managing to fulfill his commitment to us. Of course, all our thoughts and prayers are with you, Governor, and your family. He is a governor dedicated to his people, to the rule of law, and to the future of the United States of America, and we're very pleased and honored to have him with us today, Governor Rick Scott.
Good morning. Thank you for the introduction. It's great to be here. I want to introduce a couple of people. First, this is my wife, Anne. We've been married since we were 19 years old. We've been very fortunate. Melissa Sellers, she makes sure if I say anything, she corrects it. He didn't really say that. She does communications. And then Jesse Panuccio is my general counsel, and he's done a great job. So 10 days after a long and contentious presidential election, it seems that our whole political system is becoming a sort of constant campaign. One election barely seems to end before we're in the middle of another one. There is virtually no break in between. It leaves us tired and a little aggravated. A break is especially important in between elections because elections are about problems. Good governing is about solutions. So today I want to take a break from the constant campaign in Washington and talk about solutions. As governor, my job is to help solve the problems of Florida families. First, everybody wants a job. Everybody I've met in Florida, they want to go to work. Second, every parent wants a great education for their child because it gives their child, they know it's the chance for their child to live the American dream. And third, they have no interest in the cost of living going up. In 2010, as I started on my campaign, I was a complete newcomer. I had never run for office before. Growing up, my family struggled financially. My parents, we moved a lot because my parents kept changing jobs to try to make ends meet. My father was a bus driver, then a truck driver. My mom had every sort of odd job you can imagine. She took in ironing. She was a hostess at a Chinese restaurant. She worked as a JCPenney clerk. I got all my clothes from JCPenney because of that. I started working when I was 7. I started selling TV guides door to door so I could try to help my family. So my parents didn't have much money. They'd never made much money. We didn't have a nice house, nice cars. But what they did teach me was that there was a dream, the American dream. And it didn't matter where you started, If you could get an education, you had the opportunity to do anything you could in this country. As long as you were willing to work hard and sacrifice. So I was determined to work hard and chase my dreams. As you heard, after high school, I joined the Navy, married my wife, Ann, went to community college, went to the University of Missouri, Kansas City, went to SMU for law school, and then I started practicing law. I practiced law for 9 years, and basically I help people build companies or buy things, finance things, and then I decided I wanted to try to do it myself. So I started a hospital company with $125,000 we'd saved, and 9 years later we had 343 hospitals, 150 surgery centers, 285,000 employees, and it was just by doing exactly, trying to do the right thing every day, solving somebody's needs. So in 2010, I decided to run for governor, and I decided because I was worried about, is there an American dream left? Do you have a shot anymore? Can you start out with struggling parents that teach you the values and things like that, and can you still build things? Is the dream still alive? So at the time, and still today, President Obama's in the White House, and he's building a legacy of big government. At the same time, American families are worried about one thing. If they have a job, they're worried about keeping their job, and if they don't have a job, they're worried about getting a job. But in the last 4 years, what's happened? There was a focus on Obamacare and just constant spending, spending, spending. So when I ran for governor in 2010, Florida was in a similar position. We had one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. We had lost over 700,000 jobs in the 4 years before that. Our debt was going up. We had relied on the stimulus. But the biggest thing is we were losing jobs all the time. Regulation was getting worse. And so the dream was going away. And Florida should be the state where you can live the American dream. Our housing prices had collapsed. So everybody was worried about the future. So having lived the American dream, I ran because I'm worried about it for our children. We've got two daughters, 27 and 30. We've got a grandson. So I'm worried about it for them, my grandchildren, that generation, and for all Florida families. So in 2010, we didn't have a shortage of problems in Florida. We had a shortage of solutions. So what I brought to the table was conservative solutions because they work. And I focused on one thing, jobs, jobs, jobs. I ran on a campaign. If you were in Florida at the time, it was 7 steps to 700,000 jobs over 7 years. There was no way in the world on Election Day you didn't know what I stood for. So my message is simple. Everything we do in government has to be focused on Florida families. How do we make sure that they can live their dream? And their dream is a job, a great education for their kids, and a low cost of living. So every day I get confronted with a new legislative idea or a new proposal, and the first thing I ask is, tell me how it will impact a family in our state making $40,000 a year. If we can make sure every proposal we have helps them succeed, helps them give them the opportunity to live the American dream, then that will be it's a logical proposal to pursue. So there's a lot of work left to do in our state, but we've made a lot of progress and things are headed in the right direction. We've had the biggest drop in unemployment of any state in the country. Our consumer confidence is at a 5-year high. Exports are up 18% year over year. We're going to have another record year for tourism, and I hope everybody here comes to Florida. By the way, Fantasyland is expanded. Harry Potter World's expanding. We have Legoland. My job is to sell the darn state. Legoland is expanding. Miami's still great. South Beach is really well, doing well. My hometown of Naples, it's really nice. But our housing market has come back. Housing prices year over year for September to September is up over 7%. Home sales are up. So all the sort of economic indicators you think about are headed in the right direction. Tourism, home prices, construction, all these things are happening. More people are moving to Florida. About, I think it was 4 years ago, we even had out-migration for the first time, I think, since 1946, something like that. And it's doubling this year, the number of people that have moved. The projection is this year about 135,000 people are moving to the state. But most importantly, in the first 22 months I've been in office, businesses in our state have generated 174,000 more private sector jobs. Not more government jobs, more private sector jobs. We've had positive annual job growth every month since I became governor. In fact, just a few minutes ago, we announced another 12,100 private sector jobs that are generated in the month of October by our businesses. So now we're at and unemployment's down to 8.5%, so it's the lowest since December 2008. So it's outstanding for Florida business. So I ran on a campaign of 700,000 jobs over 7 years, and now the projections in the state is that we'll have over 900,000 jobs by 2018. So these are the results, and we've gotten to this because we use conservative solutions to help Florida families pursue their dreams. It started with four important steps that reflect Florida. I'm focused on Florida families and what their needs are. I travel the state pretty much every day, and I just talk to families. What do you care about? What problems do you have? If they say they have a problem with an agency, I get the agency head on the phone and I try to solve it immediately. But it always comes down to jobs, education, cost of living. So first, we cut regulations and we streamlined the regulatory system. We eliminated more than 2,100 burdensome and unnecessary regulations. When I took office, they were adding 400 to 500 new regulations a year. We cut the time it takes to get permits. That was slowing down businesses. Today, it takes about 2 days to get a professional license and about 50 days to get an environmental permit. So by doing this, it makes it easier for businesses to compete and, most importantly, hire more Floridians. Second, we cut taxes by hundreds of millions of dollars. When I ran for governor, I promised that I would eliminate the business tax. We have no personal income tax in the state. Eliminate the business tax over 7 years. So today, more than 75% of the businesses in our state don't pay a business tax. So again, that's helping businesses compete. And I just announced last week that we're going to eliminate for another 2,000, which will get us up to about 80% of the businesses. But again, if we can make it a better place for businesses to compete and have more money to hire people, spend more money on marketing, we're going to have more jobs. Third, we made the hard choices to rein in our government spending and balance our budget. We balanced the state budget the first year, without raising taxes. First year, I projected a $3.7 billion budget deficit. Second year, $1.7 billion. By looking at every agency, how we could watch and spend the money better, we balanced the budget, and on top of that, we paid down debt. We made sure that the liability held by taxpayers and government employees for an underfunded pension system was reformed to make sure, one, the businesses didn't think there was going to be a big tax increase to pay for that, and two, the individuals relying on the pension plan would know that they actually had a pension plan when they were finished. Fourth, we worked to improve our education system. And think about it, our education system is 100% is it going to help somebody in their college or career? We increased funding by $1 billion for the year started July 1st, and we've put in a lot of accountability measurements to make sure our kids are ready for when they finish high school, they're ready for college or a career. So our economic turnaround for Florida families is well underway, and we are proof that conservative solutions work. Keeping the cost of living low for families and growing the economy so anyone who wants a job can find one is not just great policy, it is critical to preserving the American dream for future generations. As governor, I compete with other states for jobs, and some of the states are relatively easy. California, anybody from California? California, Illinois, Connecticut, thank goodness. I mean, what those states are doing constantly is raising taxes, raising regulation, and so that's our, so we're competing, and so what we do every day is try to find companies out there that can't compete. Here, I think about it as simply as this. If you're in business, or just think about yourself as a consumer. As a consumer, name the time you've ever said to yourself, you know what, I think I'll pay more for that product because I know that company's headquartered in a high-tax state. Or, gosh, I know they have a lot more regulations, so I'll pay a little bit more for that product because I know it costs that company more because they have more regulations. Or it takes longer to get a permit. You don't do it. So if we make sure that Florida businesses have lower taxes, less regulation, a faster permitting time, a sort of pro-business attitude, guess what? Our businesses are going to out-compete everybody, and we'll get more jobs. And that's what we're doing every day. Now, in contrast, my biggest competitor is Texas. Texas has been doing the right thing. If you look at it for the last of the 8 years, Texas has been perceived as the number one place to do business. So when I first got elected, there was a Republican Governors Association meeting, and Ann and I had met Governor Perry, but didn't know him well. So I went up and I said, look, here's the deal. I'm going to tell everybody I'm going to kick your rear. I said, because I want everybody to understand we're going to compete. And so I said, you can either take it nicely or not. And so he said he would. And so we've been on Squawk Box and things like that, and just talking about how we're competing for jobs. I had invited him to a fishing tournament down in Destin. I didn't tell him some of the things we were doing, but we both invited a veteran. And so I thought we should have team hats. My team was called Beat Perry. And his team was called I'm Worried. And then, you know those gigantic bowling trophies? I got one with a big number 2 on it, because I know he would end up in second place in something we were doing that day. So I scheduled to go on Neil Cavuto together, and I gave him this great trophy right in the middle of our segments, which he really enjoyed. But I wanted him to get ready. I wanted him to get used to being number 2. But Texas has done the right thing. But conservative solutions are clearly working in places like Texas and Florida for Americans to fulfill their dream, which is really they want to get a job, great education, keep the cost of living low. Perhaps now more than ever, it is important for states to stand up for the principles and policies that the federal government ignores. We will keep balancing our budgets, cutting taxes, and eliminating regulations that inhibit free market solutions and economic growth. Yes, states could be in an even better position if we had a federal partner that believed in the same things we do. Florida is the fourth largest state in the nation. If anybody's here from New York, we're about to pass you. We'll be, by I think another 12 to 18 months, we'll be the third biggest state. We continue the international hub of Miami, and we're clearly the tipping point in presidential elections. I believe, and I'm convinced, that if Florida, Texas, but in particular Florida, does the right thing, the nation will eventually follow. Alexander Hamilton, in a speech to the New York Constitutional Ratifying Convention in 1788, explained, that citizens must dwell on the balance between national and state governments, with particular attention because it forms a double security for the people. If one encroaches on their rights, they will find a powerful protection in the other. We all must work aggressively to protect the American dream for future generations. From the very outset of our constitutional experiment, there has always been a temptation for the federal government to expand the reach of government, it seems the last 4 years a lot more, and to diminish the sphere of individual freedom along with it. In the face of adversity, it is easy to look to an all-powerful government machine that will promise to fix all problems, realize every dream, and line every pocket. But we know those promises are empty. There is no government replacement for hard work and dreams. What citizens in this country have always yearned for and demanded is the equality of opportunity, not the equality of outcomes. Give me a shot. Give me a chance. That's what we all want. Government overpromises and underdelivers. Government has no inherent incentive to be efficient. In fact, I've been governor now for 22 months. No one's come to my office and said, you know what? I think you ought to completely cut the program that I'm responsible for. And some people come in, they say, you know, that's, I care about this cause. I said, well, do we have any programs that are responsible for that cause now? Oh, yeah. I said, so is your program better? Absolutely. I said, which one should I get rid of? None. Nobody comes in and says, get rid of anything. So then I asked him, what tax would you like me to increase on Florida families, especially your family? Which tax? No. I don't want more taxes. So instead, government has a natural inertia toward its own growth. Programs become larger and more unsustainable until eventually the services they once offered are just hollow promises to be fulfilled on the backs of future generations. More promises lead to more spending. I'm not sure there's even an off switch to the printing machine of money up here in Washington, which, as you know, we can't do at the state level. Our national debt is impossible to fathom, much less sustain. The worst part is that our children and grandchildren are going to be left paying the bills. While promises and spending seem to flow in an unmitigated stream from the nation's capital, those of us at the state level, we have to balance our books. In Florida, we are required to balance our budget each and every year, a novel concept here in Washington. That is a major reason why we reject the short-sighted politics of spending promises that result in long-term costs to taxpayers. Of course, our state had increased its state debt approximately $1 billion a year for 20 years. But since I took office, first year we paid down about $500 million of state debt, and this year we're paying down about $1.5 billion. So we've completely changed it. They were increasing $1 billion every year. The balance of budget just kept borrowing more money. We all remember the stimulus that was to have begun projects like high-speed rail in states without the financial support to continue them. So, you know, the federal government offered us $2.6 billion and didn't understand why I didn't want to build a high-speed rail project, high-speed from Orlando to Tampa, 84 miles. The last pitch was it would be a good tourist attraction, but some people didn't understand why we turned it down, but here was the deal, and I think you still might be able to get it. You get $2.6 billion a year, okay? Now, if you look at, you've got to build the track and the train. Historically, look at California. They thought it was going to cost, $33 billion? It's now over $100 billion. So you have to build it. Then you have to lose money. I haven't found any rail projects that make a lot of money. And if you want to shut it down, you got to give the $2.6 billion back. So anybody want to take? So far, no one's, I've done this all over the country, no one's ever suggested. I guess California is, I guess. We'll get more jobs out of California. Or the mandate of Obamacare, now officially reinvented as the largest tax increase in American history, which comes with only a few years of promised federal funding to support states that then we will be forced to take that funding and raise our taxes. What I always ask people is, what tax would you like to increase? My goal, though, is to work with the administration to reduce the cost of health care. If you think about when you think about what you want out of health care, you want lower cost, that's the problem, you want to have good, great outcomes, and you want to have great access. So what I want to do is work with the administration to focus on those goals, not to ruin the cost of health care or increase the cost of health care and hurt access. In order to grow our national economy, government must live within its means. In Florida, anybody from Texas? Let Governor Perry know we are on track to beat Texas. But on the national level, I know he doesn't believe that, of course, but on the national level, we will continue to look more like the faltering economies of Europe with rising inflation. And think about what that's going to do. Think about all the individuals in our country that are on fixed income. But how can you expect that we're not going to have rising inflation when you have trillion-dollar deficits year after year after year? So we have to band together and demand out of our federal government real solutions for fiscal management, and we need economic growth. 100%. Somebody asked me the other day about the if I was in Washington, how I would think about the fiscal cliff. I'd say I would come to work every day and focus on one thing. Does it increase the number of jobs for Americans? If it doesn't, you don't do it. The only thing we ought to be thinking about is jobs, jobs, jobs. So we are all here today because each of us believe in the American dream. In one generation, my family went from financially struggling parents to a son that has the greatest opportunity. And by the way, this is the greatest job in the world, but hopefully no one will run against me in 2014. But by the way, if you are, being governor of the great state of Florida, if you like people, is the best job you can ever imagine. You get to travel the state and just talk to people and try to solve their problems. And it is a great, when I was in high school, my guidance counselor told me I should do be a social worker, and that's what this is. And it is the greatest job in the world. So that's why I ran for governor and why I'm standing before you today. Conservative solutions work, and they will preserve the American dream for future generations, just like my family. Our principles are just as powerful today as they were last week, last year, and last century. We can debate how well conservatives campaigns, and we can marvel at the tactics used by the other team. But the political landscape, as always, is bound to change. Our ideas are permanent and lasting, and they are worth fighting for more now more than ever, and they absolutely work. As long as people like you are willing to fight for real solutions and conservative principles, this will remain the country we know and love, a country that guarantees individual rights through limited government, economic opportunity through free enterprise, and security through robust national defense. You all know as well as I do that we can never surrender our freedoms and our principles, for the simple reason they are not ours to surrender. I want to leave you with a challenge as I conclude. I am challenging you to pledge your time, intellect, talent, and money to spreading conservative ideals, the central tenets of the American dream, in every forum possible. Get involved in campaigns, run for office, do a stint in local or state government, take a pro bono case defending a state or local government under attack from a liberal special interest group. Pay attention to judicial appointments at the state level. Most of the law in this country is practiced in state courts, and they have a huge impact on the fate of our policies. As governor, I look for one trait above all others in judicial appointments: an inclination for judicial restraint. I want to appoint judges who will understand, as the U.S. Supreme Court once explained, that law is something more than mere will exerted as an act of power. And if you think about being governor of a state like Florida, your biggest legacy is probably your judges. We've appointed just over 80 judges now so far in 22 months. And so these are the individuals that are going to help. They're going to decide whether we have three branches of government. I always remember civics class. There are three branches of government. I always try to make sure everybody always remembers that in our state. Is that a nice way of saying that, Jesse? The election is over. We may not be happy with the current occupant of the White House, but the question is, what are we going to do about it? Will you take action or stay on the sidelines? Will you join the fight for conservative solutions with states like Florida, where we are fighting for families by creating jobs, quality education, and keeping the cost of living low? The time for arguing over who caused our problems has ended. Now is the time to take a break from the constant campaign and implement real solutions. We are doing it in Florida. It can be done anywhere. I am challenging each and every one of you to get in the ring. Our ideas are either worth fighting for everywhere or they're not worth fighting for anywhere. I just want to finish by thanking you very much for the opportunity to be here, and thank you for what you do every day. Thank you. I think Dean said we have time for two questions. Yes, sir.
Political freedom and economic freedom.
I think the question is there a relationship between political freedom and economic freedom? Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the countries that have the best political freedom, they generally have the best economic freedom. If you think about it, if we want jobs, okay, business people want to be in a society where they know that they can, if there's something going wrong, they can fix things. So if we don't have political freedom, we're not going to have economic freedom. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit about your decision regarding setting up or not setting up the state exchanges under the Affordable Care Act. Thanks.
Sure. As you know, the Obamacare gives us, because of the Supreme Court, Obamacare gives us two opportunities. One, we have the opportunity to do a state exchange or not. If they don't, the federal government will do it. And then we have the expansion. So what I've said is, what I want to do is sit down with Secretary Sebelius, and let's see if we can do something that does these three things. But the only way we can do it is if it does this. It's got to reduce the cost of health care, the biggest problem. It's got to improve access, improve quality. Now, here's the problem that we have right now. We're not getting a lot of information out of the federal government right now, but here's what we know. Illinois is the next state that's a little bit smaller than us. And my understanding of the numbers out of Illinois is that just to set up the exchange is about $90 million. Okay, so who's going to pay for that? Second, it's projected to cost up to about $90 million a year to run the exchange. So who's going to pay for that? So, and we're bigger, so it would cost our state more money than that. So my concern is the exchange is not going to reduce cost. But I'm going to try to sit down with Secretary Sebelius and see if we can work on a way that reduces cost, improves access, improves quality. So my experience, I had this last year, we had like a 30-year-old lawsuit with the federal government over the Everglades. So I sat down with Justice, EPA, Corps of Engineers, and Interior to try to get a solution. And by doing that, we were able to get a solution that fulfilled our needs and theirs. I'm hopeful. Hopefully, we can do the same thing. It's the same problem with the expansion of Obamacare, the Medicaid in our state. I mean, I want to take care of everybody that needs to be taken care of. We all do. I want to make sure there's a good safety net. I want to make sure that we can afford it. Because I'm so worried that it's going to force big tax increases, which will devastate our economy and do just the opposite of what Floridians want. For healthcare, lower cost, better quality, better access, and outside that, jobs, education, cost of living. The last question, then we'll go. One more.
I actually had exactly the same question, so I have a follow-up. Has your administration considered how damaging it is to state sovereignty and to state autonomy to allow yourselves to be basically deputized into the implementation of federal policy? Have you considered how what a great way it is for the federal government to expand its power if it can deputize state agencies into implementing them under the threat of coming in and doing it themselves?
Here, I'll tell you what, absolutely. Here's, if you become governor of probably any state in the country, it's like this. First off, your budget's tied to the federal budget. And by the way, when you do your first budget, you're shocked that all the federal money is free money. Did you know that? That's the way I explained it to you. But they're involved in every agency. And so what I've done is go through agency by agency, because they're constantly, there'll be a grant where they'll get you involved in a program, one that you might not be interested in, but everybody would like more money out, and the attitude is it's free money. But we fight to try to defend states' rights all the time. I'll give an example. In our state, I want to have honest, fair elections. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you don't have the right to vote in our state. So there was a federal database called Save Out of Homeland Security that we asked for, that we as taxpayers paid for, that we have a right to, and they wouldn't give it to us. So we ultimately ended up in a lawsuit with Justice, and we won. We won because we were on the right side. We have to look at every day about our own state sovereignty and what our own rights are. I mean, it goes back to the Alexander Hamilton quote. For all of us as individuals, for whether it's economic freedom or just the freedom to live our lives the way we want to, we've got to focus on states' rights, because if we don't, and the federal government will run everything about our lives. So thank you. Let me just finish by thanking you again for the opportunity to be here. Thank you for what you do every day. Have a great day. Bye-bye.